Space has always captured humanity's imagination. I mean, let's face it, space is cool. But only the chosen few are able to head beyond the Earth's atmosphere. It takes years of preparation to actually take on that final frontier. Space training pushes the human abilities limits to the very edge. So who are these superheroes of today? Let's get to know them a little better.
Every cosmonaut's path starts here in Zvezdny Gorodok, or Star City. Learning to operate a spacecraft, breathing under G-forces, moving in zero gravity, working in outer space, and even coping with long-term isolation. All this is taught with the help of flying labs, centrifuges, hydro labs, and a lot more. Space is closer than you think. Cosmonaut Anton Shkapilarov is a veteran of four space flights. He knows better than anyone how space becomes one's job.
Thanks for taking the time to meet here, basically in your office. So, space, it's your job. How does one go about doing that? How do you become a cosmonaut?
It was my childhood dream to be a cosmonaut. And I decided, just like Yuri Gagarin and the first team of cosmonauts, to become a fighter pilot first before joining the Cosmonaut Corps. It took 8 years to prepare for my first flight. And now Russia's space agency is running a public recruitment campaign to the cosmonaut unit. Basically, any Russian citizen under the age of 35 who has a higher education and meets a few other criteria can try to be selected.
As a cosmonaut, you have to actually stay calm. Because you're sitting on top of a rocket in some instances with so much force and thrust going up behind you, there's so many things that can go wrong. You have to stay calm. Can you train for that? Or is it something that is just in your nature? I understand that you also have parachute exercises that are kind of a psychological check as well.
That's a good question. I think there's no person who by nature is prepared psychologically for unforeseen circumstances. And space flight itself is, of course, hard and sometimes dangerous work. If an emergency occurs, the most important thing is to be calm and collected. That is to do everything the way you were taught on the ground when you were preparing for the flight. Each cosmonaut undergoes special parachute training, during which 4 to 6 jumps are made almost every day over the course of a month. On a long jump, which lasts about a minute, the cosmonaut has a special pad on their hand, a small plastic pad, on which there's a small task. It might be as simple as a mathematical plus or minus calculation or telling the time shown on a one-digit clock. You can only look at the task once you make the jump. When you're stabilized in free fall, you can begin to solve the problem. Each helmet has a microphone and a recording device that records everything you say and see. So you speak as you do your task. After the jumps every night, our specialists overlay the video that the cameraman takes of you with what you say. And then psychologists, who are always present at the jumps, make conclusions about your reactions in an extreme situation. And for me, it definitely is an extreme situation because I'm not a professional skydiver. And I know from my own experience that from jump to jump, the first 100 to 200 jumps, I could feel how I was getting mentally stronger, more composed. I could control my emotions. And even in such extreme situations, I could report on what was going on. So, all cosmonauts go through that.
Another psychological test, I guess, is the isolation chamber, where you have to go a number of days in silence, deprivation, sometimes without sleep. That seems to me that could also really be a trial. What does that do for astronauts? How does it help you prepare?
The Sordo chamber is a special room here in Star City. It has no windows, only a door. When the door's closed, there's absolutely no sound inside. During the time you're in the chamber, it can be from 3 to 5 days, you have no normal voice communication with anyone. You confuse day and night. There's a bed next to you. This is also mentally tough, as you want to sleep on it, but you can't. Not all the candidates for space flight selected for the cosmonaut team passed the soundproof chamber test. I mean, they were suspended from training and expelled from the cosmonaut squad because they failed the Sordo chamber test.
I've always said that there's nothing more loud than the silence in your own head.
Yes, of course. It simulates long spaceflight. When there may be, for example, a lack of communication, you may be alone in the spacecraft, and there may be a delay in transmission of information. So I think it's a very necessary test, especially for long space flights.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we think of cosmonauts training, one thing is a stereotype or kind of a certain image is you spinning around in a centrifuge, right? What exactly does that do? I know that it applies more G-forces on you. Can you explain a little bit what that means and what do you do? How does it help you as an astronaut prepare?
What's the centrifuge for? The centrifuge simulates overload, which is what a cosmonaut feels during a rocket launch and return to Earth as he breaks from the speed of 8 kilometers per second to virtually zero. It feels like your weight increases in proportion to the overload. For example, the overload is at +3, so your weight has tripled. How does that feel? You try to lift your arm or leg. It doesn't matter. You feel like it's 2 or 3 times heavier. It's like something heavy has been put on it, like a lead suit. It's hard to move. It's also hard to breathe. There is a special technique that helps deal with that. Using our muscles, we take in air by holding the chest and breathing superficially with the abdomen. This allows us to continue functioning, to keep the circulatory system working. We don't lose consciousness and continue to perform our tasks.
So now you have these laboratories, these planes that take you up into the parabolic curves, they give you about 29 seconds of zero gravity, zero Gs. Is it like the real thing? Does it really give you that experience?
Yes, it is real zero gravity. The Aleutian IL-76 plane is really big. The cabin is almost 4 meters tall and completely empty. There are no seats. And the floor is covered with padding to minimize the risk of injury. And the cosmonauts in training use it to learn to move around the cabin in zero G before they go on a space mission. They also learn to put on their EVA suits in zero G on a plane like this. This is what they need to be able to do in space. So these flights really help them experience zero gravity in advance.
You've done all your training. You're up on the ISS, and now you have to do experiments because cosmonauts, astronauts, you have to do experiments while you're up there. In fact, space flight itself is kind of an experiment. What do you do up there? What's it for?
That's a good question. Many seem to think that we go out there just to have fun floating about and taking pictures of our planet, although we do that too. But the main goal of every space mission is to perform a number of experiments, and that's what the cosmonauts do. Being in space means we can observe Earth from the outside, and we use it for various experiments to study our planet in detail. They range from simple ones like taking pictures to more complex ones like spectral imaging with special purpose equipment. And that allows us to see not only things on the planet's surface, but also what's underground. We also study how human bodies adapt to being in space. So we run experiments on ourselves. And with the help of our space scientists and space medics, we're looking for ways to extend human capacity to spend time in space safely. We're looking to have people not only spend 6 months or 12 months or more in orbit and then successfully return to our planet, but also to land on the moon if needs be, or on Mars, and be fit enough to continue working there. In general, the International Space Station is the world's largest, or if not the largest, then still definitely the most expensive laboratory ever created by humanity.
What's in store for the cosmonauts of the future? Here in Star City, Sergei Makayev is preparing for his first ever space flight. It's so good to meet you here at such an interesting facility. I have to ask, we all know about zero gravity out in outer space, being able to flip and training for that. But how do you train for that in a swimming pool? Why do you have to become a diver?
Any preparation for working in outer space involves training in our hydro laboratory. Cosmonauts practice all of their actions here in order to repeat them in space. We walk through the entire sequence, practice the entire plan of action in the lab, and also coordinate our actions as a team and decide who does what during the spacewalk.
I hear that one outing in a spacesuit, you can lose 2 kilograms. Is that true, and why is that?
It's hard work, actually. As you know, spacewalks nowadays can last up to 8 hours, sometimes longer. All that time, you're confined in your suit, and you work a lot, so naturally you sweat. That way, you can lose even more than 2 kilos, depending on the job at hand.
So when you're on an EVA or an extravehicular activity outside of the space station, you rely a lot on your hands, which means you're training your fingers, if I'm not mistaken. How does that work? I mean, how do you do that?
Of course, hand strength is important, and so is grip. Basically, your entire shoulder girdle is involved here. There are certain tricks, like in any profession. When working in a spacesuit, you shouldn't fight it. You need to become one with it. And then you will have enough endurance to get you through the entire spacewalk mission.
I know that we have as authentic as you can get of a mock-up inside a pool here. You're inside a spacesuit, but when you're here, you have some safety precautions. You have divers who are down there with you who can help you if you get in trouble. When you're in space, who do you rely on?
Of course, in outer space, it's only you and your crewmate that you can count on. Nobody goes out into space alone. Spacewalk missions always require 2 crew members, each keeping an eye on the other. So you only have your mate to rely on, yourself and some help from Earth.
It's been a long time since we have gone to the moon, but right now there's a lot more focus and attention on going back to the moon. How does this affect your training?
Right now, I'm only hoping that one day I will be part of those moon missions. I think any cosmonaut and any space agency wants to be on a mission like this. This dream is the reason you become a cosmonaut, not only to go to outer space, but to go to the moon as well. In fact, all attempts to go to the moon are just testing the technologies that will take humankind further into space. First, we need to gain a foothold on the moon as an interim phase, and then move on. Obviously, this is going to take some time, but there's no doubt that it will happen in the near future.
You work a lot with robots. That's natural. And is there a possible movement to use more robots, possibly even AI, maybe even replace cosmonauts at some point? Is this part of the plan? Or will there always be a need for the cosmonaut in space?
We have robotic systems at the International Space Station, and although I'm sure the technology is going to develop and move forward, it will never be able to replace humans. Robotic systems and cosmonauts will be moving towards the future together, with robots helping humans explore outer space. At first, there will be some small systems assisting cosmonauts with minor tasks, but eventually, as the systems grow and develop, robots will be entrusted with more and more routine work. I hope those robots will be safe to work with and will really make the work of cosmonauts easier.
So, new spacecraft, long-distance flights, we've talked about that a little bit already. That means new kinds of training, things that haven't been done before, kind of going because you don't know what to expect, how to prepare. How is that affecting your training?
Prolonged space flights, be it lunar missions or just year-long orbital ISS flights that have become so common recently, require a new kind of training. Training for a lunar mission includes learning to drive lunar rovers on the moon and landing on the moon in a manual mode. While we can find suitable conditions on Earth for lunar driving practice, other things, like manual mode flight and landing drills, require either computer modeling or practicing landing in a helicopter. I think this is going to be the key type of training for such long-term space expeditions.
Right, so this place will never stop being fascinating to me. Now, more of a fun question. I know that cosmonauts can be superstitious. Do you guys have any traditions, or have you taken up any good luck charms with you?
Yes, there are many traditions, and some of them were started by Yuri Gagarin himself. There are good luck charms, too, but they have an official name, the zero gravity indicator. The crew captain takes with him a small stuffed toy. The toy gets all kinds of required approvals to be included on the equipment and cargo list, and is listed there as a zero-gravity indicator. That toy's hung on a rope above the captain's head. After the captain gets inside the cabin and seals the door, He usually hangs it there himself, making sure it doesn't get in his view when he's watching the controls. As the rocket launches, the rope extends because of acceleration, and once we reach orbit about 9 minutes later, when we're 200 kilometers above the ground, that's where zero-G begins. We can't feel it immediately, physically, but the plush toy is the first thing that begins to float. That's how the crew realizes that we're in orbit. We're in zero-G. We've made it to space. I've seen first-timers on my crew get really excited about seeing that toy float. They'd start throwing pencils at each other as a way to at least see the zero-G while we can't yet feel it physically. We have to wait until central control gives us permission to unstrap ourselves from our seats, and then we can experience zero-G fully.
Very cool. All right, so we've talked a lot about, like, the training. We've talked a lot about what it's like being up there. But getting down is pretty hard, and it seems that it can put a lot of stress on the vehicle, stress on you. It can be terrifying. But you have said that keeping kind of a childlike attitude has helped you. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, yes, if you compare the launch and the return is the more dramatic and thrilling part. I usually compare it to a roller coaster. You feel the G-factor. You're sitting in the landing module, the re-entry capsule, and you're being twisted and turned as it slows down against the atmosphere. Your capsule starts burning up and you can see it engulfed in flames through the windows. I try to help my crewmates who are on their first descent so that they don't freeze in fear, but rather stay engaged with the re-entry process instead of just sitting there and praying. What I tell them is, imagine that you're children on a fun ride. You can scream, you can shriek, I'm okay with all of that. It's better if you express your emotion than if you bottle it up inside. Whatever happens in the capsule is only recorded by the flight recorder. It's not going anywhere. Once people get the idea, they relax and reassure each other. So we've learned that going through this stage can be easy and even enjoyable.
So you can't always predict exactly where you're going to land. We know that it's going to be somewhere in this general area, the tundra. Sometimes that can go wrong, as we know with Leonov. So you have to do survival training. What's that like? What's it about? What do you train for? What type of survival conditions?
Yes, we learned that lesson after cosmonauts Leonov and Belyaev had an emergency landing. They found themselves in the taiga during a brutal frost far from any human life. And 100 kilometers from the nearest road, they were in their spacesuits and no clothes to change into, so they almost froze to death, even though they'd survived the landing itself. This teaches us that the Earth is a diverse place. Your landing site could be a forest, a lake, a desert, even a mountain. That's why we undergo survival training for various types of terrain. You must learn to survive for a given period of time without your survival kit as the only resource.
All right, so this gives you an idea of the size, and this is just the Russian part of the space station. So you've been up here, you've done your job, you've made it down, and I have to ask a question kind of from the kid side of my heart. What does it feel like to be back on Earth after you've been in zero-G? What does it actually feel like on your body?
Well, I'd say it feels as if you're in some kind of super heavy suit. Each of my four expeditions were 6 months. This means that I didn't experience any gravity for 6 months in a row. I remember my thoughts when we landed. I had to exit the spacecraft. As the captain, I'm the first one to go. I only had to unfasten myself from the seat and stretch out my hands in front of me so that I could be pulled out and evacuated from the capsule. I remember feeling that my arms were so heavy, they wouldn't even move without significant effort. As if I was holding something really big, like 3-liter water bottles in each hand. After I was pulled out and seated in a chair, I felt the physical force pulling me towards the ground. I actually felt that energy, the pull, the sensation of gravity.
Very cool. Okay, so I'm also in the presence of not only a cosmonaut, but an actor as well. You were part of the Vizov movie, The Challenge. Something interesting about that is that you took two people to space who didn't go through all the training, all the cosmonaut training, but basically just did a rapid, quick succession of training events so they could get up there and film this part of the movie. Does this open up new avenues? Does this open up space to more people?
Roscosmos gave us a very short time frame. 3.5 months. We never had such a short period of time to train two people for space. Normally, we have almost three times longer. But this experience proved that it is possible to train people even within such short time frames. So this trip made by the crew of the Challenge has indeed opened the way for more people to go into space.
One of your colleagues, a Soviet cosmonaut, actually said this beautiful phrase that when you go up into space, you leave a patriot of your country. But when you return to Earth, you're a patriot of Earth. That's a beautiful idea.
You can't see country boundaries from space. We may have an idea about where a country lies, but we can't exactly tell where one state ends and another begins. It's something you often notice when in orbit. So we come to realize that Earth is fragile, and we must urge people to preserve our home. And when I get back to Earth, I really feel no boundaries. Nothing feels truly abroad, because wherever it is, it's still on Earth.
Only a handful of people were chosen to be the first to take on space. Edward Buinovsky was among them. What was it like, and how do you prepare for something that you know so little about?
First, I want to say I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. I've heard a lot about you. In my mind, you're kind of like our extended family, because in full disclosure, your daughter Marina is my producer. So when you were chosen as an astronaut, you were preparing for things that we didn't know what to prepare for. We didn't know what zero G would feel like. We didn't know what traveling in outer space would be like. So what was that like to be preparing for something that was unknown to everybody?
In January 1963, I was selected as a member of the second group of cosmonauts. By that time, four people had already been to space. There was no cosmonaut training center back then, and not much experience. So we were, in a sense, guinea pigs. With us as test subjects, they worked out what it was like to live in space, how to eat in space, how to deal with basic bodily functions and so on. I was among four of the youngest members in the group. We were being trained for a long-duration flight. At that time, nobody knew what it was like to be in space for an extended period. So we were put through extremely tough training.
Your training was very difficult back then. In fact, it was much more difficult, much more harsh than the training that is taking place today. What did you have to do? What was expected of a cosmonaut back then? And what types of trainings have since been dropped?
A lot of the things we had to go through were later dropped, like training sessions in the thermal test chamber. What's a thermal chamber, you might ask? Well, they put you in a sealed box where it's close to 90 degrees Celsius and you're fully clothed. You're in your overalls, your heavy boots, and wearing a hat. So the test was to wait until your body temperature rises by 2 degrees. But it turned out there was no use for the test, so they gave up on it. But other tests remained. For example, I know that in this training center, when they do high G training, they go up to 8G. But we used to have tougher standards. We trained up to 12G. Also, as you can see here at the center, they've got all these simulators and elaborate machines. They even have the craft on display here. We had none of those.
Nowadays, there are entire laboratories that can fly and simulate zero gravity, these airplanes that go up and down. Back in your time, how did you simulate zero gravity? Was there a way to do it? How did you find this ability to do so?
Yes, in my time, there were no flying laboratories. We used to fly planes called MiG-15 UTIs. Each of us had our own flight instructor, myself included. The pilot did a maneuver called a parabola, the same as flying lab does, only it has a more powerful engine. At the top of the parabola, you achieve weightlessness, but it's only for a few seconds. And in those seconds, I had to try eating a wafer.
Now, when you were chosen as a cosmonaut, only the elite, only a very select few, could become a cosmonaut. But now there's an open call for anyone who is interested. Is this a good thing?
That's right. Ultimately, you too can become an astronaut. The grandfather of Russian aviation and Russian space exploration, Nikolai Kamanin, said that space is just an extension to aviation. That's why the first group of cosmonauts was formed entirely of fighter pilots. Then it turned out that engineers, doctors, and design engineers can all go into space as well. So the requirements were like this. If you passed the weightlessness test and completed centrifuge training, you could be considered a candidate for space flights. I think that very soon, working in space will be just as essential as working in IT or doing carpentry. In other words, it will be a sought-after profession.
Back in your time, when a cosmonaut would return from space, they were an instant star. Nowadays, people have a hard time knowing who their cosmonauts are, who their astronauts are. Why do you think this is?
Today, space exploration has become commonplace. You turn on the TV, and there's always some story about what's happening in orbit. It's become the norm. In my days, it was different. When a cosmonaut went to space and returned back to Earth, they became a national hero. But we were the first ones, and being first is always difficult.
I, for one, think that space flight will never be routine. It will always be fascinating. Thank you for your work. I'm familiar with your work on the Buran program as well, and it's been an honor to talk to you today.